Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered. It's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
KYW News Radio Original Podcasts.
It's just a good conversation with somebody that you didn't know you were interested in. I'm Matt Leon, and this is One on One.
You know, when I kind of took this career path, people that are close to me, friends, family, nobody was surprised. they said, well, Richard, you've been coaching since middle school. Like, whether it be basketball, soccer, whatever the sport was, like, I've always kind of taken on that role of being like a coach or being kind of like that right-hand man to a coach. And I've just kind of always kind of seen the game from that perspective.
And our guest this week, Richard Carrington. He was recently named the new head men's lacrosse coach at Haverford College. Richard, thanks so much for coming in studio.
Oh, Matt, thanks for having me. Looking forward to it.
So I know we were talking off the air as we're recording this near the end of July. You are still, life's a whirlwind, just getting into the position and moving down to the area. So why was this the right job for you at the right time? You've got a long, successful career in college lacrosse. Why was Haverford right for you?
For multiple reasons, Matt. I think that, you know, when we look at the surface level, you know, Haverford College has everything to offer that I was looking for in an institution. When we talk about the student experience and for that, you know, really kind of just talking with some alums that all had great things to say about the place. And I actually lived in the area about 15 years ago, and I was coaching at Chestnut Hill College. So some familiarity with the place. And at that time, you know, Haverford was a top 10 program in the country for Division III men's lacrosse. And then certainly amongst one of the best liberal arts institutions in the country for academics. So again, just in talking with some of the alums, you know, they really wanted to kind of see it get back to that level of play. And that was music to my ears, and especially having already seen it previously, been at that level, I know it wasn't something that was just in theory. I've seen it actually executed. When we talk about, you know, the location, most high academic liberal arts institutions are not located, you know, minutes outside of Philadelphia. You know, most of them are in a, you know, more rural setting, which is great. But at the same time, when you have access to a city as big and as I guess as boisterous as Philadelphia is, with all that it has to offer, it's really, really tough to kind of like turn that an opportunity like that down. And then, of course, when we talk about the outcomes, I really look at, you know, return on investment when it comes to college. You know, right now, I think most families should be looking at return on investment as it pertains to, you know, to the rising cost of higher education. And when you look at, again, outcomes and where Haverford graduates end up, they're just incredible places all over the world. I just last week speaking with an alum who's based in Tokyo, but again, we have them all over the world and every profession you can think of. That's kind of the surface level as to why and why now. But I think at a more personal level. Again, you know, the student experience is something that's personally important to me. I like to know that the students where I'm working are generally happy to be there, regardless of the element of lacrosse. You know, the other piece being that, you know, Haverford is very distinctive in terms of the autonomy it grants to students. The honor code that we have at Haverford is a little bit unique in that it's really the students that are editing that from year to year. They're managing that body of work. It's, you know, there's not a lot of, you know, faculty and staff involvement in that. And the students are also holding each other accountable to the words that are in that honor code. And again, that theme of student agency is something that, again, resonates with me because that's really my coaching style, and that I like input and I actually require collaboration. So I love to be surrounded by, you know, by student athletes that are actually vested in what they're doing and that work. And if it's just me kind of dictating to my players what we're going to do, it's just not great for anybody. At least not a great experience for me. But when we have that, you know, great discussion, I feel like it's much easier for me to create buy-in. And then also I get great ideas from them. Again, we're coaching in Haverford now. We're going to be, and previous to this at Amherst, coaching just some highly intelligent individuals that offer an awful lot in terms of the progress of our program. So definitely, you know, want to need their input. And that being an overall theme at Haverford, it seemed like an ideal spot to kind of nurture my style of mentorship. And then I guess one of the last pieces here, again, another personal reason is that a lot of schools, most schools, talk about diversity and talk about, you know, making a concerted effort to go out and make their campuses look more like the world in terms of ethnicity, in terms of socioeconomic makeup, in terms of being a first generation student in many cases. Again, it's kind of the buzz topic right now, so to speak. But when we look at Haverford and its practices, it really is a place that it doesn't just, you know, say these things in theory. It actually, you know, puts it to practice. That was important to me because, you know, in the lacrosse world, it's a constant theme with us. You know, we want to grow the game. But when you ask the average Joe, what are your thoughts on lacrosse? Oh, that's a sport primarily for Caucasians in the Northeast that are affluent, and that is a description that many of us are working hard to change, and it's not. Not easy work. It's really about making folks understand that as much as we want to grow lacrosse and as much as it is growing, it's not going to take that next step until we really work hard to very deliberately diversify our game. And I think by coming to Haverford, an institution like this, it's going to give me an opportunity to help others gain access, regardless of their background or their makeup. And again, Haverford's an institution that is that meets 100% of demonstrated need. So again, there's another barrier that's really been kind of, you know, taken away by the policies, you know, created by the institution. So again, this is layered, and I've rambled on forever, but a lot went into the decision to come here, and it certainly wasn't a decision made flippantly. I loved my time at Amherst. It was coaching with Sean Woods, who's a mentor and a close friend. I've known him for, you know, almost 20 years. Like, he's family. So, you know, to leave him and to leave, again, the men on that team at Amherst was a tough decision. For sure, but it was also, being in Haverford was a part of a plan that really was kind of 5 or 6 years in the making, where, you know, we really said that we would be better served and be in a better place to serve students at an institution that's high academic, that, again, really prioritizes student autonomy, really prioritizes outcomes and the overall student experience.
You mentioned diversity. You are a rarity as a black man head coach in lacrosse. I think the last number I saw, about 13, around 2020. Why do you think it is a sport that is so white? Is it access? What would you say are the main reasons for that? And how much progress do you feel has been made in opening the sport to everyone?
Yeah, absolutely. And access is probably the largest, you know, barrier. And I think that lacrosse is a niche sport, but it's also a very close-knit community. Actually, before I kind of get into this, to kind of go back to the numbers piece, that again, in 2020, there, you know, about 13 black lacrosse coaches collegiately on the men's side. That number's decreased since then. We actually, you know, we have less that, you know, some have gotten out of the profession altogether. So it's troubling to see that that number is going kind of the wrong direction currently. But again, access, you know, to the sport being like the primary, you know, barrier for sure. But as I was saying, lacrosse is such a close-knit community that there's just so much networking involved. And if you're not in the a certain network, if you don't have the right connections, the right mentors, it really is tough, you know, to make it in this sport for a long period of time, whether that be as a player or as a coach. But, you know, very, very, you know, optimistic about the future of the game. When we talk about, especially on the player side, there are so many groups out there and organizations that are working hard to grant access to folks of all walks of life. Organizations like Harlem Lacrosse that have branches all over the place, including Philadelphia, City Lax, Blacks Lax, and the Blacksers blog is doing a great job in terms of just kind of, publicizing all the good work that's going on and some of the accomplishments of players. So, again, I'm very optimistic about things, you know, in terms of the direction it's going. But there's also seems to be a little bit of an endpoint in terms of where you can go with this if you are a minority. Because when you look at the coaching landscape, as we alluded to, that looks a certain way. And again, that goes back to my piece about being in the certain network and having certain connections. If you're not able to make a phone call to a well-established coach that has many ties, has a great reputation, it's really tough. If you don't have a relationship with a certain group of coaches, it's very, very tough to kind of take that next step in your career. So me personally, I think that from where I'm sitting now, I'm in a place where I can certainly do my due diligence to make sure that, you know, we're getting the best players in that we possibly can, the best students in that we possibly can, but also taking a look at what else can you do for our campus? How else can you enrich our campus? But yes, I'm an institution now where we certainly have a chance to go out and open more doors and create access into a place that, again, we talk about Haverford, just produces success and produces, you know, great leaders. And, you know, on top of that, you know, from a coaching aspect, I think I'm also at a place where I can, you know, be more of a mentor to those looking to get into this profession that want to know how to gain access into some of those networks and want to know how to really progress in this career. So, yeah, a lot to unpack there for sure when you talk about the responsibility of being, you know, one of the minorities coaching at this level. But it's one that I feel that it's a role that I take on. It's also one that I believe is kind of at the very, I guess, nature of the game of lacrosse. Like lacrosse, the story of lacrosse is about inclusivity. It's about everybody. This game is for everybody. This game was given to us, you know, by the indigenous people. So it's really important to me that we, if we're going to say grow the game, that we actually, take actions to do just that. And I believe that really starts with diversification.
Have you felt, as a black coach and head coach, have you felt more pressure?
Sure.
Think? Yeah.
Sure. I mean, there's just, I guess like the safety net there is a little bit thinner than maybe for most, in that there's immense pressure to make sure that I present myself a certain way. I don't generally wear shorts to work, even though it's, you know, I'm in athletics. I can wear gym attire every day, but generally when you see me, I'm in a pair of khakis when I show up to work, because again, I think it's important that if, you know, the president of the institution were to drop by the office, that they see me looking like I'm at my business, you know, at work, and because that's the way that I take it. So it's something that, again, it's maybe not a measure that I need to go, but it's a measure that I feel that I have to go. When we talk about going around to various events and coaching and showcases, I pride myself on giving a maximum effort, you know, to the players there, regardless of their age, regardless of their ability. They paid money to be at that showcase, and they saw who was going to be coaching there, and they were probably excited to see, you know, those, you know, that list of schools that were going to be attending. In that regards, I don't dare compare myself to a professional athlete, because again, it's been a long time since I've been athletic, and at my peak, professional was not a word you'd associate with my performances. But I do compare what we do as coaches at these showcases to, say, the a player in the NBA that's maybe like taking the night off, load management, right? It's, well, what about that person that paid that, you know, all that money to come see you, and that was the one game that they could afford to come see, you know, that year. or maybe in a lifetime, and you're over there resting. So when we show up to these showcases as college coaches, I don't know how many events you're doing during the course of the year. I don't know. That may be it for you. It may be make or break for you whether or not you're going to go through with playing lacrosse or continue your career. So I can't risk not showing up for you. I've got to make sure that I'm enthusiastic. I have to make sure that you're having fun, because generally if you're having fun, I'm having fun. But again, that's the pressure as well in that, and generally at these events that I go to, I am one of the only, if not the only, black person there. I can't be the one that's like working less. That wouldn't work out well. So there's some pressure there. Maybe some of it's, internal, but regardless, there is pressure.
So what is your entry point to the game? What's your earliest lacrosse memory? How'd you get into it?
Earliest lacrosse memory. Wow. Well, you know what? We talked a lot. We talked earlier about like visibility being an important piece, and coming in high school. Like I was, I'm originally from Charlottesville, Virginia. Actually, born in Brooklyn, New York, but raised in Charlottesville, Virginia. And Charlottesville, I think, is a kind of a unique pocket in that lacrosse is, even though it's a southern city, but lacrosse is taken very seriously there, which is just rare, for that region. And of course, being where UVA is located. That gave us access to that team and those players. And I was fortunate enough to, in middle school, again, this is well before I even was really thinking about lacrosse. I was friends with Kenny Arena, Bruce Arena's son. So that gave me access to UVA and ball boyed for some soccer games. And of course, that led me to watching some lacrosse games at UVA as well. And that's where I was kind of introduced to Dom Starja, the longtime head coach at UVA. And then I saw Tommy Smith, who is a black lacrosse player at UVA. I'd never seen a black lacrosse player. I've seen lacrosse before, just being in that area, but I'd never seen a black lacrosse player until Tommy Smith, and he was a beast. And I mean, it was so inspiring to watch him. I said, yeah, I've got to figure out how to play this thing. So my mom took me out to play it against sports. I do remember my first stick. I don't remember my first experience with lacrosse, but my first stick was a shotgun. This thing was. It was a played against sports type of deal. It was to the point where my first couple of practices, one of my friends on the team said, Richard, you can't play with that anymore here, and just gave me a stick because it was a little bit embarrassing. But I didn't know any better, and I was just having fun. So again, I don't know if I'm here sitting with you today if I don't see Tommy Smith playing lacrosse at the University of Virginia.
How long did it take you to really fall in love with playing the sport? Like when you realized you're pretty good at it and you had the access and everything, but do you remember when you were like, this has to be a part of my life as long as it can be?
Well, I'll tell you that my love for the game came long before I was even remotely a decent player. So I went a lot of years, being, okay, we'll take you, being that guy. So I'm very appreciative to some folks that gave me a shot. But I think lacrosse is a game that it's easy to fall in love with. And when you talk about the speed of the game, when it's played at the right, played the right way, in my opinion, the creativity that comes, from the game, the physicality, like these are all things that when we talk about American sports, is what people are looking for. So again, lacrosse is right there in terms of being a sport that can be highly popular. You can see the growth around the world as well. We're just coming off the World Games. It was so inspiring to see so many nations out there competing. But again, it's not going to take that next step until we really work to diversify it as well.
So describe your game. You went on to play at college. How would you scout yourself as a lacrosse player?
Sketchy stick skills at best. Catching and throwing was not my thing. I will say that I was blessed with some speed, and generally I was the fastest guy on the field, so that kind of helped me get out of some situations and evade some situations that quite frankly my stick skills could not handle. But again, to kind of scout myself, this is tough. But I was a defensive player, so I think that I played with a decent amount of physicality, but I've put on quite a bit of weight since college too. I think at my peak in college I was probably about 200, but again, I'm only 5'8", so built kind of like a juice box, about as wide as I am tall. But I think when my freshman year in college, I came in weighing 140 pounds, so put on an awful lot of weight during the college years to try to make my physicality mean something, because as a freshman it really really, you know, it was like, you know, kind of swatting a mosquito away from you. But by senior year, I would hope that I was able to do some things with my physical presence. I think probably, I guess, if I had to kind of wrap it up in a nutshell, my playing style, it would be similar to my coaching style in that it's intense. I'm very passionate about this. I care a lot about it, and I'm not afraid to show it. So whether it's playing or whether it's coaching, there's not going to be too many quiet moments, so to speak.
So you went to Mars Hill University. That's down in North Carolina. As you're playing, do you always figure coaching is going to figure into the equation at some point? You know, as your college career is winding down, are you thinking, I'm going to coach, or was coaching not something that entered the lexicon until it entered the lexicon?
No, I had no idea. It wasn't the career path at all. I actually wanted to do what you're doing. You know, right now, I wanted to go into broadcasting or some form of journalism. But I, as you can clearly tell by my presentation here, this broadcasting probably is not the way that I needed to go. But coming out of college, actually went back home for a year and substitute teaching as I kind of figure out, you know, navigated some career, you know, some career options. And, you know, my high school coach, Scott Neese, who was a graduate of Washington and Lee University, he invited me to come back and help out the team. So I took him up on that offer and been coaching ever since. But I really fell in love with it at that time. And you know, when I kind of took this career path, people that are close to me, friends, family, nobody was surprised. they said, well, you know, Richard, you've been coaching since middle school, like whether it be basketball, soccer, whatever the sport was. Like, I was a wrestler in high school as well. Like, I've always kind of taken on that role of being like a coach or being kind of like that, you know, that right hand man to a coach. And I've just kind of always kind of seen the game from that perspective. And maybe that's because of lack of ability. I know what they say, you know, those who can't do coach. Well, that would be pretty accurate with me.
One of the things that's interesting to me about your resume from a coaching standpoint is you mentioned earlier you'd been at Chestnut Hill and you started things at Chestnut Hill. And that's one of a couple places mm-hmm. where you've come in and basically been given the keys and saying, we want you to build lacrosse, have fun. What is that process like when you come into a place? Is it sometimes almost on one hand easier because you get to set the tone and set what's important? But I guess on the other hand, it will be nice to have some infrastructure in place so that you're not the first person calling the bus company, not the first person calling the hotel company to like set things up. You know, what was that experience like being asked to begin a program multiple times?
It's great. And I think that there are pros and cons with any situation, right? And to kind of go back a bit, when we talk about, coaches, minority coaches trying to break into this profession, that's another piece that's really kind of like, it's not talked about enough in that when you look at my minority coaches, black coaches specifically, the percentage of us that have had to start programs from scratch as opposed to taking over established programs, exponentially higher than, our Caucasian counterparts. It's not to say that like, oh, well, you got to start a program from scratch, that's all negative. It's certainly not. But when you talk about that process, you're going to take some lumps, especially if you're doing so in a competitive league. And when you go and look at some next opportunities or progress in your career, you know, one of the first things that any athletic director is going to look at is the win-loss record. Mm-hmm. And so it makes it, again, another hurdle to try to get over in terms of, like, again, progressing in this profession. So I think that's something that's not talked about enough, and it needs to be, brought to the forefront in terms of, some hiring practices. But regardless, there are some positives when we talk about, you know, starting a program from scratch in that you're not having to reset or retool a culture. It's the one that you build. You can decide based off of the recruiting that you're doing what type of style, you know, that you really want to play. And in certain regions, more so in the places where lacrosse, isn't as prevalent, sometimes you run into an athletic director or an administration that they just don't know much about the game, so they rely on you heavily to tell them. And in that case, in some cases, it can be an advantage in that, like, okay, they're going to trust my word, so I won't have a lot of fight back in terms of putting some things in place that we need. But the flip side of that is that if you don't have somebody that understands the game of lacrosse and our needs and, you know, is typically, you know, gets directs with more of a authoritarian style, like it's going to be a little bit challenging in terms of getting things that you need to be productive as a lacrosse program. I've been fortunate enough in my career where I've had it, a little bit of both, right? I've had some places where I've got to fight tooth and nail just to get a lacrosse ball, and I have some places that I've been to some places where they'll do anything to help you, anything to make sure that the student athletes are having a great experience. So yeah, it's been interesting, but certainly it's a case that, again, I've done it twice, and I'm glad I've gone through that experience, but it's not something that we as minority coaches should have to do in order to get our foot into the door.
That being said, do you think it made you a better coach just because that soup to nuts where you have to be responsible for everything, and I'm sure it's exhausting, but when you get a job now at Haverford where the infrastructure is in place, but you have an appreciation for what goes into everything that makes a successful program?
Yeah, there's no question. There's no job in this profession that I can't do or have not done at some point in my career. So, yeah, there's some definite advantages to having that, I guess, that on my resume. I do feel like, and this is, again, it feels awful to say, but I feel like I am an expert at my profession because, again, there's just no facet of it that I haven't done at some point. And I think that as a coach, you really need that. Like we talk about, or we ask our players to find solutions to problems. And as a coach, that's really our profession. You better be a career problem solver. And if you're not, you're probably not going to be in it, the profession very long. So I feel that certainly, my problem solving skills were strengthened by situations in which I had to build and had to create because there was nothing there.
We need to take a break. We will have more with Richard Carrington right after this. This is One on One.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So that means a half day. Yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds slow after 35 gigabytes of networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detectthesos.com today.
And we are back on One-on-One, continuing our conversation with new Haverford College head men's lacrosse coach, Richard Carrington. How long did it take you as a coach to feel like you were good at it? And I don't necessarily mean wins and losses, but you had your arms around
what the job entailed, what you had to do, what you had to pour in to achieve success, to have an impact on the kids. Did it take a few years for you to kind of appreciate all that went into coaching?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and they say this all the time, like you don't know until you know. But like being a first time head coach at Chestnut Hill, years ago, I felt really prepared going into that job. I'd worked for Sean Woods, who was also my head coach at Amherst College, and he gave me an awful lot of autonomy, and I figured a lot of things out and was able to kind of like have my hand in a lot of parts of the program because he gave me that ability. And when I went to Chestnut Hill, I felt like, well, there's not too much that I don't know. And that was a rude awakening because there was a ton that I didn't know. And again, until you really go through the process, like I don't know that you ever really quite feel that you have your arms around the situation. And, like as far as again, like, knowing whether or not like that I'm on the right track or certainly like I guess productive as a coach, that changes from game to game because there's some games I'll come away like, wow, like we really coached them up that game, and there's some games like, oh my god, I'm the worst coach in the world. It really does change from game to game. So that's a very fluid piece. But as far as like I guess feeling I have a good handle on the profession and what it takes, yeah, I feel confident in that, and I've felt that way, I guess, probably since that first situation at Chestnut Hill.
How do you measure success in general?
Well, in general, I guess the easiest thing I can tell you is, are my former players checking in on me, and are there still some relationships there? You know, am I being invited to weddings? That's how I measure it, because if these men graduate and I wasn't very impactful in their lives, or they just didn't have any appreciation or love for me, then I'm doing something drastically wrong, and it's time to change something. But like that's an important piece, and if that element's not there, then I don't care how many trophies you can hold up, it's not success in my opinion. And of course, championships help and things of that nature, but like that's if you're doing this for championships and for the wins. Primarily, you're going to have a short-lived career.
We talked earlier about, as one of the few black coaches, if there's pressure, and then you also talked about going to UVA and seeing Tommy Smith and the impact that had on you seeing somebody that looked like you. On the other end of that, or not other end, but do you go day-to-day thinking about that a young black kid might see you as a head coach and that you are inspiring them simply by doing what you do? And I would imagine that could be a little emotional, a little overwhelming sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's always at the forefront of my mind. I'll tell you, like I coach. In my opinion, I coach with a lot of juice. I take pride in it, and nothing gets me like more fired up, or nothing fills my tank more than when I have a young black player, or it could be a parent, of a black player that'll come up to me, during an event and thank me. Just for being there, I can't. It's overwhelming, and it's a humble reminder of the responsibility of being one of the few black coaches in this collegially. It's absolutely something I think about a lot, and it's again another reason why I feel the pressure of being able to carry myself a certain way at these events. But it's also one in which like there's no feeling like knowing that maybe I can do what Tommy Smith did for me.
When you distill the sport of lacrosse down, what is your favorite part of it?
Wow.
I mean, the actual sport, nothing around just the game itself. What is your absolute favorite part of it?
The emotion. I guess it's true of a lot of sports, but I think in lacrosse in particular, you can't tell me that you love sports and then you go and to a Final Four of lacrosse and say, that was boring. That's the emotion that and the intensity of the games, especially the big games, the dramatics that happen during the course of a game. Like it's just, there's no feeling like it. And yeah, there's so many elements that I love about the game, the story of lacrosse, the strategy that goes into it. But when it all comes down to everything else, like it's really about like playing in games and really if you're doing it the right way in practices as well, like there's so much passion involved in it. Like it's really easy to have fun.
What are your goals to start at Haverford, and we were talking off the air, you're just getting settled in, and I'm not asking you where are the strengths on the team or whatever, but what are the things that you want to impress immediately that Haverford lacrosse is going to be all about on your watch?
So I think immediately it's about collaboration, because we have a lot of highly intelligent, opinionated young men on that team, and I wouldn't have it any other way. And so it's important for them to understand that, you know, they have a head coach that is eager to hear their opinions, eager to base our program and our culture around their vision. So there's not, do I have my own vision? Sure, but that's secondary. Like, it's really about, like, coming up with a collective vision and carrying that out. So that's going to be, you know, one piece for sure. You know, the collaboration that is a goal of mine. It already exists within the program, but I want to crank that up a notch in terms of, like, introducing committees within the team, and giving, I guess, more avenues for folks to, like, voice their opinion that aren't going to, I guess, for lack of better terms, like, paralyze us out on the field. Because if we're constantly in debate, like, how are we ever getting anything done, right? But I think that we need to create opportunities throughout our time together where, you know, we certainly are debating and we are, you know, sharing ideas. And that's how we're going to move this program forward for sure. Another goal, and I'm still kind of wrapping my head around exactly how I want to verbalize it, but I think that this group of men, they've been very results driven, and I think, you know, a lot of folks, you know, are results driven, right? We work in, or we live in that kind of society, and again, in our profession, if everything is going to be based off of wins and losses, it makes for a very, very difficult season. Winning is important for sure, but if you take a loss that maybe you thought that you should not have taken, throughout my career, I've seen so many people take a loss and quit. They're just done. And I'm not talking about, like, leave the team, but just, like, just they lose a lot of confidence in themselves. And they lose a lot of confidence in the teams because of that one loss. Like, one loss, two losses, three losses, is not going to make your season. It's about, can we get better every single day? Can we find a way to incrementally get better throughout the season? Because in those cases where that's where the focus lies, that's the goal, to just make sure we're finding a way to get better every day. Generally, in my experience, winning takes care of itself. Like, you're going to find that success, you know, towards the end of the season. One of my favorite years as a coach was coming off of probably my worst season as a coach. But I guess this was 2019 at Tusculum. We had an extremely young team. That team was younger than our inaugural team at Tusculum. So we had some transfers for that inaugural team. But yeah, so this team in 2019 was just, there were a lot of bright eyes and bushy tails, but they just, you know, a young group. And what they did was they committed to that mindset of, we're just going to get better every single day. Yep, we took that loss. That's a tough loss to take. We shouldn't have taken that one, but that's okay. We got to show up the next day. And what was so rewarding with that group was when we got to the end of the season, it was literally a make or break game versus Catawba. At the time, Catawba was ranked nationally. And also at the time, Tusculum had never beaten a nationally ranked opponent. And No one thought we were going to win the game. As a matter of fact, the conference was talking about potentially even canceling the game because our field was flooded, and you know, it was not playable. And you know, I guess there was something going on at Catawba where, you know, it was going to be tough for us to try to play out there. So we ended up having to play at another institution, which isn't easy to do when you talk about that region. But we go out there and a game that almost didn't happen. And the guys show up and they compete. And I mean, it was an incredible game. It was like a double overtime game. In the in one of the overtimes, we commit a penalty. So we go man down. You could see some of the guys start to slip, but then you could also see their teammates pick them back up. Like, no, we just keep going. We keep believing, because that's just what they were doing the whole year. And we end up winning that ball game and getting into the conference tournament, you know, with a team that really had no business being there. So I want to make sure that we have that mentality here with Haverford as well, that, like, we're not defined by one or two losses. Let's focus on getting better incrementally every single day, and let's focus on having some fun.
When it comes to driving the competitiveness in you, is it driven more by a love of winning or a hatred of losing?
That's a great question. I don't know. It's one. It's probably been asked to me a million times, but at the same time, I probably have given to a million different answers. Does it have to be an either or?
Not necessarily.
I think it's a little bit of both. But I'll tell you what supersedes both, you know, the hatred of losing and the, you know, the love of winning. It's my love and enthusiasm for this game. That's what drives success more than anything for me. I think when you look at the love of winning, yeah, like if you can't find time to like celebrate with your team and like, you know, do a little some dancing in the locker room and, you know, on the road trips, jump on and to the karaoke and do some bus karaoke with the boys. Like, this, again, you're not going to last in this profession very long. And at the same time, you know, with the losses, yeah, it's really tough. Like, and I've gone through phases in my career where like it's, there were times like after losses, like you're not going to see me for a while. Like I'm going to be locked in a room, you know, and in my office probably, and like rewatching the game over and over again, like trying to figure things out, and it's not healthy. So I think that, you know, as you mature, you figure out better ways of doing things. Otherwise, again, you're not gonna make it very long. But like I think that hatred of losing, that has to be done in a way that it doesn't destroy you. Like it yeah, you take your lumps and you can I'll allow myself to complain for about 20 minutes after a game, and then it's on to the next.
What has it been like, just big picture, to see the explosion in lacrosse during your lifetime? Because 30 years ago, it was hard to find lacrosse on TV. It was hard mm-hmm. to, if you weren't in a hotbed that had a big time college program or whatever, you very well may not have been. Now it's everywhere, really, and right. It's easy to find. You see it on TV when you're just flipping channels. What's it just been like to see the sport explode?
I mean, it's exciting, and it's really you know, good to see. But I'm not surprised. Like, as we talked about earlier, like this is a really exciting game. Like it's a game that's easy to fall in love with. Now, we don't make it easy with all the rule changes that happen from year to year. But I'm not surprised with the growth of the game. Probably, you know. Conversely, I'm surprised it's not bigger by now. But again, I think that in order for that to happen, we have to, you know, grant access to more people.
And to that point, that was going to be my next question. If you were king of the world, if you had the ability, you talked about some of the great organizations earlier that are doing to open doors for blacks and other minorities in the game. Are there things that you would like to see, you think, that would really help accelerate that growth in minority communities and maybe places that just aren't familiar with it, or places that maybe there's people there that want to play but just don't have a route to get there? Like, what were some things you would like to see to grow the game in that way?
Absolutely. I think that probably the two biggest things on different fronts. One, when we talk about the coaching profession, we need to, I guess, get out of our comfort zone as coaches and not always resort to like our network when it comes to like hiring, hiring coaches. Like it's okay to open jobs up and see what else is out there, because you may get some resumes across your desk that really excite you. And I think that if we consistently rely just on our networks and just through people we know, we're probably leaving out a pretty, you know, big portion of the population. So that's on, you know, kind of the coaching front. Probably what's more important on the on the playing front, we have got to find a way to lower the cost of lacrosse. I've said now for years, like, the company that figures out like how to make a really good product and sell it at a reasonable cost, and I'm talking about like where entry to the game doesn't cost you more than $10, like somebody that can put together a complete, you know, youth player pack that's decent, like it's you know high quality for like, you know, $10, maybe $15. That company like is maybe it's going to lose money at first for sure, but like that company is going to be one that like that's the 18-year-old, 19-year-old lacrosse player is going to be like, no, I'm playing with that piece of equipment because that's what I've always played with. That's what I'm used to. That's what I love. But yeah, it's way too expensive to gain access into the game right now. So we got to find a way to lower the cost. And again, there are organizations out there that are doing that by donating sticks and other pieces of equipment. So that's great. But again, I think it's, you know, when will the companies kind of take the next step? And that also kind of bleeds into the way that you have to kind of progress in lacrosse in terms of trying to get into some of these collegiate programs. In that, most of us as college coaches recruit at tournaments or events that cost, you know, mm-hmm. thousands of dollars to attend.
Right.
When you factor in travel and lodging and food, and then of course, like, you know, team fees, it's a lie. I'll tell you that if this was the lacrosse landscape when I was growing up, where you had to pay this much, a certain amount of money to be a part of club teams and be, and go to all these events, like, there's no way that I'd have been a college lacrosse player. It just would have been, you know, no shot for me to do that. So that's, again, just the overall cost of the game, and again, like, you know, breaking down our reliance on using our networks.
Richard Carrington, this was great. Thanks so much for coming in.
Matt, thank you.
And that will do it for this week's episode. Want to thank New Haverford College head men's lacrosse coach Richard Carrington for coming in studio and being our guest this week. If you like the show, if you listen on Apple Podcasts, leave us a rating and a review. You can follow the show on Twitter at @OneOnOnePod. You can follow me on Twitter as well at @MattLeon1060. Thanks so much for listening, and be sure to check us out again next time when we bring you another conversation with someone you should know more about.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit DetectTheSOS.com today to learn more.
This holiday season, choose gifts that feel thoughtful and practical with Omaha Steaks. Whether you're hosting or gifting, they deliver the world's best steak experience, and it makes you look like you planned way ahead. They've got USDA-certified tender steaks, juicy burgers, comfort meals, and tons more. Gifting Omaha Steaks is honestly one of the easiest wins. Everything arrives beautifully packaged, super convenient, and the quality is unbelievable. Their filet mignons are some of the most tender I've ever had. And the variety means you can personalize every gift. Plus, orders placed by 6 p.m. Eastern ship same day. And everything is backed by their 100% guarantee. It's holiday gifting made simple. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Sizzle All The Way sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code T-BONE at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, code T-BONE.